The first step in managing IT security is to develop a security policy based on the three main elements of confidentiality, integrity, and availability. This is the CIA triangle. Confidentiality protects information from unauthorized disclosure and safeguards privacy. Integrity prevents unauthorized users from creating, modifying, or deleting information. Availability ensures that authorized users have timely and reliable access to necessary information. Since absolute security is not realistic, managers need to balance the value of the assets being protected, potential risks to the organization, and security costs. For best results, a risk management approach is taken that involves constant attention to three interactive tasks: risk identification, risk assessment, and risk control. Physical security is the protection of personnel, hardware, programs, networks, and data from physical circumstances and events that could cause serious losses or damage to an enterprise, agency, or institution. This includes protection from fire, natural disasters, burglary, theft, vandalism, and terrorism. See Component 4, Unit 8, Security, for more information. To ensure operations center security, physical access must be tightly controlled, and each entrance must be equipped with a suitable security device. One such security device is the biometric scanning system, which maps an individual's facial features, fingerprints, handprint, or eye characteristics. These high-tech authentication systems will replace magnetic ID badges, which can be lost, stolen, or altered. Secure operating systems, locks, backups, tracking software, engraving, and stringent passwords all help to guard servers, desktop computers, notebook, laptop, and tablet computers. To provide security for network traffic, data can be encrypted, a process of encoding the data so it cannot be accessed without authorization. Other issues of interest to the concept of network security include wireless networks, private networks, virtual private networks, VPN, ports and services, firewalls, and network intrusion detection. Application security requires an understanding of services, hardening, application permissions, input validation techniques, software patches and updates, and software logs. The hardening process makes a system more secure by removing unnecessary accounts, services, and features. Computer configuration settings, users' personal information, and other sensitive data are stored in files. File security is how the files are kept safe and protected and is a vital element in any computer security program. User security consists of the identification of system users and consideration of user-related security issues. Regardless of other security precautions and features, security ultimately depends on system users and their habits, practices, and willingness to support security goals. Identity management refers to controls and procedures needed for identification of legitimate users and system components. Password protection aids in keeping a system secure, and it's up to the users to ensure their password is long and complex and not shared with anyone. Procedural security, also called operational security, is concerned with managerial policies and controls that ensure secure operations. There needs to be a corporate culture that stresses the importance of security and the procedures that everyone can follow to maintain that security. Some of the tasks included are backups, updating firewalls, paper shredding, email storage, internet access issues, logging in and out of applications, and how security personnel should treat suspected attackers or hackers. Computer systems need provisions for backup and recovery. Backup refers to copying data either continuously or at predetermined intervals. Recovery refers to restoring the data and restarting the system after an interruption. A disaster recovery plan is the overall backup and recovery plan that prepares for a potential disaster and is part of a larger business continuity plan, or BCP. Backup policies contain detailed instructions and procedures, and an effective backup policy will help a company continue business operations and survive a catastrophe. The backup policy needs to specify backup media, the types of backups, and retention periods. Backup media includes tape, hard drives, optical storage, and online storage. There are four types of backups: full, differential, incremental, or continuous. Full backups copy everything and are time-consuming and redundant if most files have not changed since the last backup. Differential backups take copies of only the files that have changed or are new. Incremental backups copy just those files that have never been backed up by any method. Continuous backup is a real-time streaming method that records all system activity as it occurs and requires extensive hardware, software, and substantial network capacity. Retention periods are set for a specific amount of time depending on company policy and legal requirements. Backups are stored for a specific retention period, after which they are destroyed or the backup media is reused. Business continuity issues today include concerns about terrorism and extreme weather. The Business Continuity Plan, BCP, includes but goes beyond a disaster recovery plan. These plans define how critical business functions can continue in the event of a major disruption. The disaster recovery plan needs to be accompanied by a test plan to simulate different levels of emergencies and record the responses for analysis and enhancements as necessary. Some BCPs include the use of a hot site, which is an alternate IT location anywhere in the world, which can support critical systems in the event of a power outage, system crash, or physical catastrophe. A hot site requires data replication, which means that every transaction on the primary system is mirrored. If the primary system becomes unavailable, the hot site has the latest data and can function seamlessly with no downtime. Hot sites are expensive, but they provide the best insurance against major business interruptions. Business insurance, also expensive, can offset the financial impact of system failure and business interruption. At some point, it will not be cost-effective to support and maintain an information system. All systems degrade over time, and when support and maintenance become cost-ineffective, a new system development project must be started to replace the system. From Witten-Bentley, page 714. Eventually, maintenance costs begin to increase. New technology offers a way to perform the same or additional functions more efficiently. Users start to ask for more features and capability. New systems requests are submitted, and the SDLC begins again. An information system is an investment, just like any capital equipment investment a company makes. But this information system is more than just hardware and software, i.e., one-time capital purchases. It's investing in people who make the information system run and continue to run over time. Costs of an information system are ongoing. The initial costs may be higher, but long-term costs have to be considered, and those initial higher costs may be amortized over time. Financial control must be sufficient to maintain the integrity of the system's legal, budget, and reporting requirements. Cost-effectiveness is the result of striking a balance between the lifetime costs of developing, maintaining, and operating an information system and the benefits derived from that system. Cost-effectiveness is measured by cost-benefit analysis. Companies expect benefits from their projects. Positive benefits increase revenues, improve services, or otherwise contribute to the organization as a direct result of the new system. Examples of positive benefits include improved information availability, greater flexibility, faster service to customers, higher employee morale, and better inventory management. Cost avoidance benefits refer to expenses that would be necessary if the new system were not installed. Examples include handling the work with current staff instead of hiring additional people, not having to replace existing hardware or software, and avoiding problems that otherwise would be faced with the current system. Both of these things need to be considered when performing cost-benefit analysis. Some benefits noted by previous research on medical IT systems, such as EHRs, included improved quality and patient care, more efficient tracking of patients and costs, and improved workflow across the entire institution. The computerized physician order entry, CPOE, allows clinical providers to electronically order laboratory, pharmacy, and radiology services. Due to its CPOE system, one hospital noted an average savings of 1 hour per shift in nursing staff time. That's from MITRE Corp. 2006. Cost-benefit analysis is used by business and government as a decision-making tool. At each phase of the SDLC, information is gathered and decisions are made that will allow the project team to make increasingly accurate projections of the total costs and benefits of the system over its projected life. Thus, cost-benefit information is used to decide whether to begin a project and whether to continue it. In determining the economic feasibility of a proposed system, the project's benefits must be compared to the project's total cost of ownership. Economic feasibility is when the projected benefits of the proposed system outweigh its projected costs. Total cost of ownership consists of acquisition costs, the cost of ongoing support and maintenance costs. Ongoing support and maintenance costs can determine the economic life of a system. Operational costs are relatively constant and include supplies, equipment rentals, and software leases. Maintenance expenses vary significantly during the system's operational life and include changing programs, procedure, or documentation to ensure correct system performance, adapting the system to changing requirements, and making the system operate more efficiently. A point-of-sale POS system may be implemented at all U.S. stores at a large cost. The POS enables the performance of more real-time management of inventory and sales, and therefore the possibility of reducing inventory using a just-in-time, JIT, accounting philosophy, which in turn reduces immediate cash outlay. This system can also increase sales, as we determine what is selling at which location. So, inventory levels of items not selling are reduced, and those that are selling are increased. Inventory is better monitored at each location, reducing the likelihood of theft and spoiled goods. Another thing that large systems can add is the ability to accept debit and credit cards rather than only cash and checks. These systems and the sign-up fee are expensive, but their benefits over time more than pay for themselves. More sales means more customers, as they realize they can now easily purchase from us. We also reduce our sales allowances through the use of credit debit cards and eliminate or reduce the use of checks, and so on. Cost-benefit analysis is the process of comparing the anticipated costs of a system to the anticipated benefits. This is done throughout the SDLC for large systems to determine the economic feasibility of the project and to compare alternative solutions. The objective is to provide reliable information for making decisions. Cost-benefit analysis considers the time value of money. This is the idea that a dollar received today is worth more than a dollar received in the future, because the today dollar can be invested to earn interest. Payback analysis determines how long it will take for the project to pay for itself. Here we calculate the time it takes for the accumulated benefits of the system to equal the accumulated costs of developing and operating the system. This places all the emphasis on early costs and benefits and ignores the benefits received after the payback period. Popular but with drawbacks, payback analysis is often used for the initial determination to approve projects. With a minimum payback period set, calculating the payback will allow decision makers to say yay or nay to the proposed system. Return on investment, or ROI, calculates the percentage rate measuring profitability by comparing the total net benefits, the return, received from a project to the total cost, the investment of the project. ROI analysis considers costs and benefits over a longer time span than payback analysis, usually 5 to 7 years. The formula for ROI is total benefits minus total costs divided by total costs. Present value analysis considers the time value of money and the net present value. The present value of a future dollar is the amount of money that, when invested today at a specified interest rate, grows to exactly $1 at a future time. Present value tables help one to perform present value analysis by showing the adjustment factors for various interest rates and numbers of years. Using a present value table and the appropriate discount rate and the number of years to be considered, the cost and benefit figures are time adjusted by the adjustment value. The net present value, NPV, of the project is the total present value of the benefits minus the total present value of the costs. Any project with a positive NPV is economically feasible, but risk needs to be considered too. NPV calculations are often used to compare and rank projects. All other things being equal, the project with the highest NPV is the best investment. Costs fall into two categories, developmental and operational. Developmental costs are estimated from the beginning of the project and need to be refined at the end of each phase of the project. Developmental costs are one-time systems development expenses. Operational costs are estimated after specific solutions have been defined. Operational costs continue during the system's operation and use phase. Tangible costs are those that have a specific dollar value and can easily be quantified. Intangible costs involve items that are difficult to measure in dollar terms, such as employee or customer satisfaction. Direct costs can be associated with a particular project and include the salaries of project team members and the purchase of hardware, software, and supplies. Indirect costs refer to overhead expenses that cannot be allocated to a specific project. Examples of indirect costs are facility maintenance, air conditioning, rent, insurance, and general supplies. Fixed costs remain constant regardless of activity levels. Examples include leasing and licensing payments. Variable costs are affected by the degree of system activity. Some examples are supplies, such as printer paper, and costs of computer usage. Management wants and needs to know how much an information system costs. Many IT costs can't be attributed or assigned directly to a specific system or user group. The chargeback method is a technique used for accounting entries to allocate the indirect costs of running the IT department. No charge cost allocation means the IT department is considered a necessary cost of doing business. IT costs are seen as benefiting the whole company, so are not charged to particular departments. In this scenario, the IT group is considered a cost center because it generates accounting charges without offsetting credits for IT services. Fixed charge cost allocation impacts all departments as a set charge collected monthly. This charge may be the same for all departments or based on a relatively constant factor, such as department size or number of workstations. In using the fixed charge method, all indirect costs are charged to other departments, and the IT group is considered a profit center because their services are purchased by other company departments. Variable charge is a per-use charge, and the IT department is considered a profit center. Variable charge is based on resource usage, assesses indirect costs based on the resources used by an information system. These may be connect time, server processing time, network resources required, printer use, or a combination of similar factors. There was once an organization who contracted their computer needs to IBM on a two-tier usage basis, one amount per computer processing unit, CPU, during off-peak times, and a higher amount per CPU during peak times. The problem was that the organization was a 24-hour-a-day corporation using high CPU during peak times, even more than during off-peak times. Variable charges based on volume has indirect IT costs allocated to other departments based on user-oriented activity, such as number of transactions processed or printing volume. In both variable charge methods, a department's share of the cost varies from month to month, depending on the level of activity. In Topic 1, Building Blocks, we covered a description of the building blocks of a large-scale system. Definitions were given for systems, computer systems, and information systems. Goals and technologies of information systems were emphasized and stakeholder roles described. Stakeholders include the system owners, users, designers, and builders, each having their own set of goals and requirements. Topic 2, System Development Lifecycle, SDLC, discussed a methodology for developing systems. The SDLC process may be applied for both large-scale systems as well as smaller applications and programs, though on different levels of size and complexity. The phases discussed were planning, analysis, design, implementation, and support and security. Topic 3, financial support, requires cost-benefit analysis with payback analysis, return on investment, and present value analysis. Costs to develop and maintain the new system are classified and allocated. IT costs are either at no charge to the system or user group, making IT a cost center, or IT costs are charged to the system or user group, making IT a profit center. The chargebacks are either fixed charge or variable charge based on either resource, usage, or volume. Although no one can predict the future, we can assume that companies will face intense competition and economic, social, and political uncertainty. In this environment, some believe the highest priorities will be the safety and security of corporate operations, environmental concerns, and bottom-line total cost of ownership. Strategic planning is an organization's process of defining its strategy or direction and making decisions regarding allocating its resources to pursue this strategy, including its capital and people. What do we do? For whom do we do it? How do we excel? Individuals may want to think of themselves as a business corporation that has certain assets, potential liabilities, and specific goals. Individuals, like companies, need to have a strategic plan. Ask yourself what you want to be doing 3, 5, or 10 years from now. Credentials and certifications are important to professionals today. Credentials include formal degrees, diplomas, or certificates granted by learning institutions to show that a certain level of education has been achieved successfully. Certifications relate to skills that can be measured and verified by examination. Organizations can have certifications such as the IC 9700 Business Excellence Certification, indicating that a company has in place the standards, measures, and processes required to ensure a high level of quality in the services or products it produces and supplies. Examples of IT credentials include the Cisco Certified Network Administrator, Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer, MCSE, and Microsoft Certified IT Professional, MCITP. Having certified IT staff helps when you are audited, since it establishes a professional level in the department organization. SOX, HIPAA, and other audits of IT are weathered better when certified staff are on hand. The Certified Commission for Health IT, or CCHIT, was among the first organization to be recognized by the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT, ONC, as an authorized testing and certification body. They've tested and certified 33 EHR products as capable of meeting the 2011-2012 criteria supporting Stage 1 meaningful use.